Well, throughout the world, including Europe and the United States and every other country, one of the greatest human rights violations is that against women and girls. And a lot of this, of course, is caused by the greediness of selfish men like employers who pay their female employees less than they do a man for the same work. But also the government sometimes, and then, of course, in places like the Democratic Republic of Congo, it's just a customary right of privilege of soldiers to rape women with impunity. In some countries, there's not even a crime to rape a woman. In many other nations, women can't have property ownership. They can't inherit their own children if their husband dies. And it's like in Saudi Arabia, they can't even drive an automobile. So in Christian communities as well, there's gross discrimination against women. For instance, I believe, and our people at the Carter Center believe, that women are should be treated equally in the eyes of God. And that includes Islam and also Christianity and other religions. But as you know, the Catholic Church, although they practically worship the Virgin Mary, they won't let a woman be a priest, and so forth. And in the Southern Baptist Convention, from which my wife and I withdrew about 10 years ago, they ordained that women have to be subservient to their husband. A woman can't serve as a deacon or a pastor of a church or a missionary or a chaplain in the military services. A woman can't even teach boys and men. And so my wife and I objected to that, and we withdrew from the Southern Baptist Convention. As a matter of fact, in our own local church in Plains, my wife is a deacon, one of the best deacons, most active, and we have a woman pastor alongside her husband, both serving as pastor. So the discrimination against women on a global basis is almost directly attributable to the declaration by religious leaders in Christianity, Islam, and other religions that women are inferior in the eyes of God. And this gives men a right to abuse women, whether it's a husband beating up his wife or depriving a woman of her basic rights or even in other ways that I've already described.
Mr. President, what are some of the discussions that went on during the forum that ends Wednesday that envisages the ways to empower women in these unfortunate circumstances in areas such as in Tunisia and Libya, where the political crises are ongoing?
Well, in some places, of course, the leaders of the opposition, the rebels or freedom fighters, were women in the forefront of the demonstrations. And, of course, one of the reasons for that is that the women have been deprived of more of their rights in the past than men have been deprived. But after the revolution was successful, say, in Egypt, they planned a million-woman march, and some of the men who had been alongside the women in the demonstrations condemned the women for seeking additional rights. So I think in Tunisia, they're now preparing for an election, and they've invited international monitors to come in, including the Carter Center. I'm concerned about Egypt because so far the military has not been willing to let international observers come in and assure that the Egyptian election will be fair and open and free and honest and safe. So I think in many ways, the leaders of some of these revolutionary efforts in the Middle East broad region have been led by women who have been deprived of their basic rights. We have people here from about 40 different nations whom we call human rights defenders or human rights heroes. A lot of them are men and women who have recognized the deprivation of human rights of women and girls, and they have joined here at our Carter Center to give us documentary evidence about some of the abuses that are being perpetrated.
Well, Mr. President, with these revolutionary moments happening, you know, in Tunisia, Egypt, and particularly in Libya as well, how can women take advantage of this to press home their demands for better treatment or, for that matter, equal treatment in these circumstances?
I think within the framework of a democracy where everybody goes to the polls and votes in a free election and fair election for their own leaders, women have a much greater opportunity or right or chance to get their basic rights guaranteed. For instance, the Carter Center has monitored the election in Nepal, where Mount Everest is, and one of the basic commitments there is that in all of the government to be elected that 30% of the total members of parliament have to be women. And, of course, this is happening in some other countries as well. And so I think that instead of a dictatorship where all the abuses can be excused, in a democracy where women might even have a majority of the votes, they have a much better chance to get their basic rights protected.
So, Mr. President, what do you think the forum that was organized by your center can help in this directive to ensure that the international community help these women to be on the same level as men?
Well, one of the things that our conference does is it lets these women and some men from the abusive countries come together. Quite often, they don't realize that they have a lot of partners around the world if they just knew them. They think they are by themselves. And so just to have people from 40 countries, we have about 60 people at the conference, they learn from one another not only what the abuses are, but they learn that they've got friends and partners like those of us at the Carter Center and other women and men who come here. Secondly, we hope to put together a common approach to this problem that will deal not only with government leaders, with individual citizens, but also with religious leaders to remind them that women are being abused and this is a direct violation of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, where everybody is supposed to be treated equally. And we have a lot of religious leaders here who deplore what's going on within their own religions, sometimes Muslims, and sometimes Christians, and sometimes other religions as well. And it's going to be a reminder to them. And so we'll use as much media coverage as possible, including this interview with you, to remind the world what happens. Also, we're going to be have a forum on CNN, a roundtable discussion tomorrow morning for about an hour, and that will be broadcast to a lot of countries around the world. And we also will have a delegation of these most eloquent women leaders go to Washington and meet with key participants in our own U.S. government, both in the Congress and in the administration, the executive branch as well.
Well, Mr. President, you delivered a speech on this issue. Specifically, what was your focus and what is your assessment and possibly the remedy to some of these challenges facing women's rights campaigns?
Well, the basic remedy, I made a major speech to an assembly of about 8,000 people in Melbourne, Australia, in December of 2009, about 18 months ago almost. And what I described to them was something that's fairly new in coming to the forefront of the world consciousness, and that is that a lot of the abuse of women and girls is directly the blame of religious leaders who have ordained that women cannot be treated equally in the eyes of God. And this is the major thrust of our conference here. And, of course, we know that most of the abuses take place with impunity by soldiers who rape women, by husbands who beat women, by business leaders who cheat women out of a proper salary, things of this kind, and by laws in many countries where rape is not a crime and where women can't inherit any property and where their children that belong to a couple cannot be adopted by the wife if the husband is no longer available. These kind of laws are now being changed, and we hope to publicize the plight of women and the opportunities that are available to women to have equal rights and to let this forum here generate a lot of publicity and momentum that we hope will carry out to a major degree throughout the world.
Well, President Carter, how can the U.S. government help in this directive? Because women in U.S. have come so far, other countries, especially in Africa, haven't gotten even half or even started women's rights issues yet. How can the U.S. lead in this direction?
Well, the United States ought to be a champion of human rights in every respect. And as you know, in years gone by, the Equal Rights Amendment was proposed to the U.S. Constitution, and it was just almost passed, but not quite, because the church groups primarily, the religious groups and a few others, came forward and said, we do not want this guarantee to be given to women, that they should be treated equally with men. And not only the church groups and a few other activists, but business leaders also opposed the amendment to the U.S. Constitution to make sure that women had a constitutional guarantee of equality of opportunity with men. So we have a long way to go in our own country, and of course, we hope to set an example for others when we have the best human rights commitments of any country. We know, though, that in many African countries and others as well around the world, women's rights are withheld. For instance, Saudi Arabia is one of the best friends of the United States. They discriminate against women in many ways. A woman in Saudi Arabia can't get a driver's license, cannot drive an automobile, for instance. And in many countries, a woman doesn't have any right to run for public office or to own property. So those kind of things that I've already mentioned in our interview are still prevailing, and we hope that the United States will use its influence as we see new democratic governments developed in other countries, including the Middle East that you mentioned, that in those new constitutions and with the development of democracy, that women's rights can be protected when they are not now and that women are discriminated against.
Now, President Carter, specifically, what will be your message to African heads of state and government on women's rights issues?
Well, first of all, they should be reading the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that declares that all citizens should be treated equally and be given equal rights, regardless of their sex or their race or ethnic ties or anything else. So women and men should be treated right, and any woman, any government that has adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and that's just about everybody, should be reminded of that fact. Also, we're working, the Carter Center is working, for just as a one, for instance, in Liberia. We're working in the rural areas of Liberia, and we are not only giving all the people who practice law in those areas, traditional priests and traditional chiefs and others, the reminder that women ought to be treated equally, but we're giving women the right, with the Carter Center's help, to appeal their cases to court when they are deprived. And so those are specific things that can be done with governments, is to remind them to guarantee equal rights for women and to remove the laws that discriminate against women. But the main thrust that we'll have from here as well is to religious leaders that I've already mentioned in this interview, Christians and Muslims and others, that they, some of their misinterpretations of the Holy Scriptures, that is the Bible and the Quran, have caused local leaders to deprive women of equal rights. There's nothing in the Quran, for instance, that deprives a woman of a right to education. But we know that the Taliban, for instance, in Afghanistan and other places in the Islamic world, misinterpret the scriptures there in the Quran and deprive women of a right to education. And of course, I've already mentioned once before on this interview that the Christian denominations also deprive women of an equal right to serve God in ways that they are called to do.
Well, Mr. President, what do you think are the prospects of this forum?
I don't have any doubt that the forum will have a good impact. Whether, obviously, we won't resolve all the problems, but one of the impacts will be to let the people that are participating form a coalition or a team so that we can support each other and greatly strengthen the local activists who are already working courageously to promote women's rights and to end the discrimination against women and girls. That's one thing. Secondly, we are learning from each other a lot of facts that we can use on our own initiatives or collectively to publicize the plight of women and the things that can be done. Thirdly, we are learning from each other about successes that have been obtained. A lot of the people who come here tell us about great progress that's being made in putting an end to mandatory female genital mutilation of women, for instance, in Senegal and other countries around the world. And also another success story has been that in many countries, the mandatory marriage of little girls, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old, will be ended as a religious and a governmental order. Another thing that's being done is to make sure that we publicized the problem with slavery and mandatory forced prostitution on young people. One of the testimonies that we had today was a woman who has studied this in the Atlanta, Georgia area, where I am speaking from now, and she said that, on an average 400 young women and little girls are taken into slavery every year in Atlanta, Georgia, and deprived of basic rights and turned into involuntary forced prostitution. So these are the kind of things that we're addressing, and we're learning a lot from one another, and this will strengthen our voices in the future.
Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Thank
for
you. I've enjoyed talking
to
you, and best wishes to you.
Thank you, and have a lovely evening, Mr.
Thank
President.
You. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye.